Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 28th of January. Welcome to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. First one to meet, and thank you for Alan T for standing in for me last week. This is the first one I've done since, of course, President Trump was reinstalled, I think we can say. Is that the right word for it? Probably not, but anyway, there you go. With you for the next 2 hours, looking at a series. Obviously, a smorgasbord of questions of topics we're going to be covering, including, obviously, the latest news coming out of the States. There's been a broad sweeping change in his first week in power, deportations, taxes, and now this new, just if you thought that ChatGPT or artificial intelligence was bad enough, well, you ain't seen nothing yet, of course. And then Trump saying maybe he wants the Palestinians not to be in Gaza as well. Warnings from Iran. There's so much, plus reform as well. There's so much to discuss. If you wish to get your viewpoint, perhaps there's something you want to talk about that hasn't been covered in that little ramble before, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
First of all, let's look at the headlines, what's making the front papers this morning. As you might expect, the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz makes the front pages, images on that, of course. The top of the ones this morning are Daily Telegraph leads the report, but the Daily Telegraph leads with report leaked from the Home Office, which says the paper will push for police to record more non-crime hate incidents. The report ordered by Home Secretary Yvette Cooper says that Labour should reverse the previous government's policy to limit recording such incidents due to concerns about freedom of speech. The Times says the review has described two-tier policing, where two groups are allegedly treated differently for similar behaviour, as an extreme right-wing narrative which is leaking into mainstream debates. The paper adds that Cooper has rejected the recommendations and features a quote from the Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philip, who said, commenting on how police respond to incidents is not far right. Daily Express and the Daily Mirror both feature pictures of an elderly Holocaust survivor who returned to Auschwitz for Monday's ceremony marking its 80th anniversary of liberation. The Express captions the image returning to hell, while the Mirror headlines, "It's our duty to remember." The Eye paper focuses on King Charles's call for the world to avoid the mistakes of the 1930s. The Guardian takes a similar approach, featuring a message from four survivors of Auschwitz who told world leaders to act against a rise in anti-Semitism. The Daily Mail's front page shows a picture of the King wiping away a tear at the ceremony in Poland and the Princess of Wales lighting a candle in London. US President Donald Trump will approve an Israeli-style Iron Dome defense missile system. That's according to an article on the front page of the Telegraph. The Israeli Defense Forces say that their system intercepts 90% of all missiles fired by Iran, Hamas, and Hezbollah. The paper adds the US military figures have concerns about a missile attack by China, Russia, and Iran. U.S. banks squeeze savers again to boost their profits. That reads the Eye paper's headline. Quoting research from the financial information company MoneyFacts, it reports that banks such as Barclays, HSBC, Lloyds, NatWest, and Santander pay an average rate of 1.42% between them on their easy access accounts, which is lower than the market rate average of 2.9% based on a deposit of £10,000. The Times says that prostate cancer is now the most common form of the disease in the England, overtaking breast cancer. The report says NHS data released by the charity Prostate Cancer UK shows a 25% increase in cases of the disease since 2020. The figures have added pressure on ministers to overhaul what have been described as the outdated testing guidelines, according to the paper. GPs are currently banned in the UK from offering prostate-specific antigen blood tests to men without symptoms. And finally, the Daily Mail reports on a warning from Pope Francis with the headline, "Thou shall not scroll." The paper says the Pope has urged young people to avoid overusing social media as it causes what he calls brain rot. So from the top, this morning, the Metro. "In a place of no hope, there is always hope." That's the Auschwitz liberation anniversary. Financial Times: Chinese AI leap triggers tech tumble by sowing doubt over chip spending. This is, of course, DeepSeek, the Chinese AI app. Daily Express: King leads world in marking Auschwitz liberation. "It is a moment when we recall the depths to which humanity can sink when evil is allowed to flourish, ignored for too long by the world." That's King Charles' speech. Again, picture of a survivor on the iPaper. "We must avoid the mistakes of the 1930s. Daily Telegraph goes with a picture of the Princess of Wales holding a candle for Holocaust victims, but non-crime hate laws set to be expanded. The Times: alert over dizzying range of extremism. Home Office review urges sweeping changes. The Guardian leads with the US tech stocks in turmoil after Chinese firm unveils AI chatbot. Daily Mail: two pictures, one the Princess of Wales, the other of the King, marking the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Before that gate, this is Robert Hardman writing, "Before that gateway of death, they gather for the last time the handful of eyewitnesses to history's greatest abomination." The Sun goes with a different story completely, and this is the referee who was sacked earlier. Davis is David Coote, says he took cocaine as an escape over fears of coming out as gay in the macho world of football. "I was too scared to come out as gay." And finally, the Daily Mirror: "It's our duty to remember," leading with the Auschwitz picture. And finally, the Daily Star leads with something different. "War of the psycho scumbag chatbots," they say. "Billionaire tech bros in turmoil as cheap new Chinese AI makes rivals look like proper thickos." You can expect the Daily Star to give you a balanced conversation. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 28th of January.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we are joined in the studio by Claudio De La Torre is going to be joining us a little bit later, he says, joined for the first time by Richard Cowell this year. Anyway, good morning to you, Richard.
Well, morning, Giles. Nice to be here.
Good to have you back with us as well. Well, since we last met last year, it is good. Yes, and good morning to those listening in as well. Yes, it has been an interesting period, and we're marking basically the first, 7 or 8 days of President Trump 2.0, the reboot. Now, I did just a little poll on the Facebook page on Talk Radio Official, and I asked those who are following. And if you're not following, I'm starting to put interactive polls on the Facebook page so that you can have your say. You can have your say on that one. So on the Facebook poll, the question was, what's your view of President Trump's first week in office? 26% said he thinks he's doing a great job. 74% says they don't like the direction he's taking the US in. Now, that either means that there's we are a bunch of woke lefties here at TRE, or our listeners are, or do you think, yes, the Facebook, yes, I'm already getting abused for that one, but it's the way of getting stuff out there. So, you know, we have seen a sweeping range of changes. We've already seen the threatening 25% tariffs on Colombia. We've seen the whole Greenland thing, the Gulf of America, Canada. It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be an interesting. 26% of my listeners are not insane, but thank you for that. So what's your take on it thus far?
Well, it's interesting. It was when, you know, Trump 1.0 is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I have to say that as a politician, he does do as he says he's going to do, which is very strange for a politician. Mm. And unfortunately, he's quite bombastic. That's his nature. He's a chap who, he was born on the wrong side of the tracks. He was born in Queens, whereas all the real estate agents, the moguls, were born in Manhattan. And he's always sort of had that as a bit of an issue. He never went to an Ivy College, you know, Yale or Harvard or anything like that. So his personality is quite brusque and difficult to gauge. He's quite a sort of a bully. And as we've seen, let's say, with the latest thing with Colombia.
Yeah.
You know, he says, right, if you're not going to accept these planes with these migrants, we're going to put 25% tariffs on all your products. And Colombia said, okay, well, fine, fair enough, you know, come in, et cetera. So he's, but the trouble with someone like Trump is obviously he has a lot of advisors behind him talking about different strategies. And it's hard to fathom which way he's going. For example, the Greenland.
Yeah.
Now, you could take the Greenland, you know, that they want to buy Greenland. There's a couple of reasons why it's probably a good idea for them to do so. One of them is the mineral wealth that Greenland has, and the other one is the Monroe Doctrine that America have always used. So, you know, not basically can't do anything in any of our neighboring countries.
Yeah.
A bit like Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah.
But we won't go into that at the moment.
Not yet, thanks.
But then the other thing about it that I don't think really has been spoken too much about is with global warming, the Arctic is now becoming navigable.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Russians have probably the largest, well, they do, they have the largest icebreaker
fleet,
yeah. You know, submarines and ships in the world. And the countries around, there's about eight countries that surround the Arctic, seven of which are NATO.
Yeah.
And then there's Russia. But Russia has, I think, by land, by coastline, the largest part of it. And they've also invited China to come along. And they've extended this Silk Road. It's the Arctic Silk Road, which means that they can bypass, for example, the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
And they go from Vladivostok into the Baltics very, very, very quickly.
And also your communications network, your satellite network. I mean, this is top of the world stuff. I mean, because we're looking at it, of course, normally you look at your map like from straight on rather than from the top.
Right.
And obviously international flights, you know, any sort of communications, military communications, you know, it's that whole northwest, it's that whole Northeast Passage thing as well, since from the Barents Straits.
Indeed.
It's always been a very important military yeah. area as well.
And it's part and package of everything that China's trying to do together with the BRICS people, which may be something that we also should discuss, because that's also part of the issue that Trump has, hence the Panama Canal part of it, you know, for commerce.
Yeah.
So what the Chinese would like to do is develop these east-west routes, but also north-south. There's an alternative. There's an existing plan that was brought up, which basically was a commercial road from India to the UAE, to Saudi Arabia, to Israel, and into Europe. The alternative that has been proposed by the BRICS people and China, the Silk Roads, is a north-south that goes India, Iran, Russia.
Yeah,
and that caters for the whole of Central Asia. So that's also something that's gathering a lot of speed. And it's in fact, there's a lot of trade, for example, between Iran and Russia at the moment. Obviously, it's enhanced because of all the sanctions, etc.
Yeah.
But that's there, that exists. So I think it's very important to understand what Trump comes out with, because there's a kernel of truth in a lot of what he says. I mean, he came out the other day saying that the United States have the largest reserves of oil in the world, which is nonsense.
Mm.
Yeah, absolute nonsense. Yeah, they're about fifth. Likewise with gas, they're about fifth
but
or sixth.
If you keep repeating, I mean, his modus operandi at the moment, and it's got to be the thing where we are the best, but we've just been, because if you listen to the inauguration speech, which was quite hysterical, well, not quite hysterical, but quite interesting, as he sat there with all the living presidents behind him, and said basically, normally the inauguration speech is one where we will go forward together as one great nation, etc., you know, the dawn breaking of it, and he just basically said,
it's a state of a nation sort of speech.
Yeah, you want to bring the people together, but he turned it into,
that wretched Biden and Kamala, what do they know about it, exactly. And everything else? Yes, and maybe he's changing. He's a TV personality, and it's a show. And everything he does is a show. You know, the big marker pen he does with his massive signature and all that.
Of course.
It's all a show. And he does it extremely well. And you've got to, whether you like him or not, he does that extremely well. And it convinced enough people to vote him in a second time, bearing in mind the debacle the first time.
And of course, within the first sort of 3 or 4 days, you've got images, you've got 1,000 deportations, you've got agents, he's mobilizing a state of emergency or putting, you know, more, I'm not saying troops, but he puts more personnel on the border with Mexico. Chicago, which is this sanctuary, so-called sanctuary city, where they're not supposed to be taking, you know, 1,000 people go by. And then this whole issue with Colombia, because obviously you've got people being deported in manacles, you know, shackles and the whole thing being led up to the, and Colombia goes, well, that wasn't part of the plan. And this is why, and then obviously he says, you know, the Colombian president says, well, we're not going to allow the military plane to land. And Trump goes, right, well, in which case, as they say, would go here, Tomaya, yeah, have some of that then, 25% on your.
Which is a little bit ridiculous on the Colombian side, because had it been a commercial flight, they would have allowed it to land. So really, you know, you have to sort of think rather carefully before you tackle someone like Trump, because you know Trump is going to come back at you harder.
Especially, so you've got to be a little bit clever. The first week of his presidency, he's not going to go. He's never going to go. Okay.
He's not going to back down.
Yeah,
never, never. Yeah. So you have these proclamations, like, you know, doing the Panama Canal and all that. It sounds good, and it's for his, you know, his for the Americans.
Yeah,
a lot of the sort of discussion. How much, you know, is America going to take Canada, for example?
Well, I mean, you know,
no, that's going to happen.
I don't think they're going to take Canada, but the Panama Canal, I mean, it was built by the Americans.
Well, yes, but it's like the British taking or the French taking the Suez Canal.
That's the one we took there, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
I'm delighted to say that Claudio De La Torre joins us for the first time this year. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. All the better for seeing you, Giles.
Yes, right, okay. Flattery will give you everywhere, Claudio. I mean, just, I will let you compose yourself. I'll take a quick commercial break and we'll get back now we've got our full panel here on Viewpoint. Back in a minute.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Right, always live, always lively. If you wanted, somebody's trying to call in there, excuse me, I had a bit of a problem with my phone lines. And we were just greeting Claudio De La Torre, who joins us, looking very well indeed. So we're looking at the first 7-8 days of the Trump presidency. We're talking about, he's made some sort of bombastic, I think that was the word.
Bombastic.
I like that, yes. I mean, but he's never going to do anything else, is he, during his first days? He's not going to go sort of full Jimmy Carter, let's hear both sides of the story. He said a whole thing about Greenland. He's made some things about Canada. He's made some interesting remarks about Gaza as well. The same place looks like a construction zone, which, you know, destruction zone perhaps more like, but then to say, and you know, he thinks that Egypt and Jordan should take in some of the previous residents, which went down extremely well,
especially yeah. in Jordan, because yes. they're already, you know, the majority of population there in Jordan are Palestinian.
Yeah.
Egypt's another sort of matter, because, you know, there are ways to persuade the Egyptian leadership on accepting Palestinians.
Yeah.
But I think it's generally frowned. The whole of the Arab nations have really sort of decried this and said, well, you know, it's not the way ahead. Again, it's one of the sort of comments that he makes, just like this.
Yeah.
We know his background in real estate. We know his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was heavily involved in the Abrahamic Accords. And we know that that Jared Kushner and his family have benefited tremendously financially from Trump 1.0.
Yeah.
So obviously they're looking at this and they might say, well, damn, you know, we can actually benefit ourselves even more with this real estate opportunity. And, you know, the background of these guys, their interest is, you know, real estate, and it's prime real estate. So it's, you know, whether you should combine. And we all know, I mean, come on the inauguration day of Trump, there was Donald and Melania cryptocurrencies brought out.
Yes, I saw that. I thought that was quite.
I mean, yeah, we got. I also view Donald Trump as a bit like, you know, the Del Boy of New York.
Right. Well, cutting deals, but yeah.
Well, you do, because he had apart from the cryptocurrency, he had a Bible.
Yeah.
But printed in China, but that's beside the point.
They had those. What do they call
NFTs?
Those are the ones. Yes, those were NFTs, quite memorable.
Watches. He came out with watches, the Trump watch and this and the other coins, the Trump coins. I mean, the guy is like a Del Boy from Only Fools and Horses. And I view him a little bit like that. So, you know, he comes out with these sort of things that are quite extraordinary. So you don't know what's going to come out of his mouth next. And I think this is actually one of the problems of his advisors, is that Trump quite often just goes off script.
Well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, at the moment he has, because of the election victory he got and the fact that he's transformed the Republican Party now into the MAGA Party, basically. So he doesn't have I've said this before, it seems to be a court of Trump, because these are people who are seeing off his own, you know, he's surrounded by William courtiers. It is like a medieval court.
Interestingly enough, it's very different to Trump 1.0.
Yeah.
Trump 1.0 had people who had a lot of experience. They were the older generation. This Trump 2.0 is totally and utterly different.
Yeah.
You know, these are younger guys, a lot of very contentious, like Huckabee or Stefanik and people like that. Hesketh. He just got in with one vote that was given by J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people didn't want him in, but he got in. So a lot of contentious people in his Trump 2.0 cabinet.
Just want to go to some of the stuff we're getting in. 952-78-4000 and the WhatsApp are +34 645 99 67 95. Reminds me of the movie Con Air. You can't put dangerous criminals on a plane without at least handcuffs. That's referring to the Colombians going back. Excuse me. Morning, that was Mark. Morning, Mark. Trump is a breath of fresh air, which is why he was overwhelmingly voted into power. Americans saw the way he was treated, and for the first time ever, they disbelieved the legacy media, who are politicized along with the Department of Justice. He's a common sense president who is following through with his promises. The people haven't been fooled. They're just sick of the Kamala and Biden farce. Some more stuff coming in here as well. Right then, Trump claims he went to Wharton, which is Ivy League. Greenland is not for sale, whatever he thinks. They may get a deal but to buy its resources, but Greenland per se is not for sale. The UK is not fifth in, the US is not fifth in proven oil reserves. It is more like ninth. Okay, there isn't much difference. Definitely not Del Boy. Del Boy was loved. Donald Trump is not. There isn't much difference between versions 1 and 2. He's still making the same stupid comments and still thinks that tariffs work. Your take on this, Claudio? What is your take on seeing Trump on the and also what it means for? I suppose we can look at Sanchez and his reaction to, because it's fair to say that Sanchez and Trump are going to have an interest. I mean, we've seen a little bit of a love in between Keir Starmer and Trump saying, "Oh well, I think that Keir Starmer's doing a good job." I cannot see. Donald Trump saying the same sort of thing about our glorious Prime Minister. And if only I could see your face when I said the word glorious there. Okay.
Well, it's funny because Sanchez, he's been openly criticising Trump for a while. Now he wants to be kind of the anti-Trump man of Europe and saying that we have to fight against him and this and the other. But for Sanchez, it's great because he has a lot of internal problems with all his court cases and problems with his coalition, and he's in a minority and he can't get a lot of laws going through. So for him, it's a great kind of smoke and mirrors to distract people.
It's the dead cat thing, isn't it?
Exactly. So it's great for him in that aspect. And in Davos, he was coming up with all this rhetoric. So I think, like, mostly what is going to be important is that Sanchez will have to very probably pay up to NATO, because Spain is the lowest contributor. It's in of all the NATO members, it's the one who contributes less in accordance with the GDP. So there's definitely, and that's not going to come down well with his coalition, which has members that have always been openly anti-NATO, anti-American. So already he hasn't passed his budget last year, and he's going to be in very hot water to pass it this year. So it's very probable that we'll go to general elections again this year because the instability is just very big, and he depends on Junts, which is the right-wing Catalan Independence Party. So, of course, putting people like Junts and Sumar, which are hard left, anti-NATO, pro-Venezuela, with the Catalan right and on economic things is very difficult. Maybe on other aspects they can agree more. But I think definitely Sanchez is going to try, and also this year, it's all smoke distraction techniques. He's convoked 100 different events to commemorate not the constitution of Spain, but the death of Franco 50 years ago, yeah. Which of the death of Franco didn't mean the arrival of the constitution, because it took several years more to arrive, basically. Yeah. And there was a whole transition, and he was still in power 50 years ago. But it's an excuse, of course, for propaganda. We'll see. Sanchez has, of course, as we know, his attorney general is being prosecuted. His wife, his brother, he has many, many internal problems. And it will be interesting to see.
Interesting. You used the V word there, Venezuela, when you were saying it. Because if you look at the way Spain is also, you know, do you think he's seeing himself as, the champion of the, the socialists against the evil Yankee go home, etc.? And also we've got the situation with, Spain along with Ireland, and is it Norway is one of the only people, one of the only countries that are recognizing the Palestinian state as well at the moment. So they are, definitely getting in. He's definitely in the making a stand on the international.
He's great at selling himself internationally, but then it's all contradictions, because he says that he's against selling arms to Israel. He announced that they weren't going to sell him any arms, and just a few months after, he gave a U-turn and he's done a massive arms deal with Israel worth billions. So of course it's all big contradictions, because he wants to, it's all electoral calculus, because he wants to take votes from Sumar, which is another group of parties with Podemos, leftist separatist movements, which are all, of course, very left-wing and fractured. So it's all electoral calculus. So Sanchez, he lied about the amnesty. He said that he'd never give the amnesty under his dead body. He did. He promised that he'd never pact with Bildu, who is the political successors of ETA, who the leader of the party is a terrorist, who Sanchez said 5 years ago that had blood on his hands and that he'd never pact with him under any circumstance. Not only he did pact with him, but he gave them the symbolic town hall council of Pamplona in Navarra. So, he's just been one lie after another. But, of course, we'll see how long it can last, because you can't lie to everyone at the time. You can lie individually, but it's very hard to lie. I never remember that saying from Abraham Lincoln about lying, which is a very great quote that applies to Sanchez.
Well, I mean, you just keep repeating the lie. That's, the oft-repeated lies turns into the truth. Yeah. Yes, Richard.
And also, you have to remember, according to Trump, Spain is part of the BRICS.
Well, there you go. That comes in from Peter on the thing. Here's a thing. Trump thinks that Spain is part of the BRICS. He doesn't. He didn't win by a landslide. If you include the percentage of people who voted, he was outnumbered. He still thinks the exporter plays the tariff. Thanks for that. So here comes one. What's the alternative, Claudio? Lies from the Partido Popular instead. That's from a listener, not me.
Well,
completely.
All politicians have a lie. Of course, it's part of their identity, both left and right. But with Sanchez, it's just been such huge, blatant lies, one after the other, and on huge topics. We're not talking about small kind of white lies. We're talking about completely contradictory things, of doing things completely opposed to what his mandate was. And he's the first president in democracy who is governing after losing the general election. That had never happened before. Up to now, all the presidents had governed winning. And let's not forget that he had Spain go to elections not only once, but twice, because he didn't support the winning candidate at the time, which was Rajoy. And he had a famous phrase, which was no es no, that he would not under any circumstance vote for Rajoy in parliament for president, despite him winning with a much bigger majority than he has now. Yet now he lost the elections and he's expecting the opposition to vote for all of his proposals and blackmailing them if he doesn't win elections. Has the other politicians lied? Of course, but I think now more the problem with Sanchez is the erosion of democracy and attacking the opposition, even like, for example, the left-wing judges. The president of the Spanish body of judges is progressive, and she has also criticized Sanchez for constantly attacking the judges, because of course they're investigating his party and his family members and his wife, accusing them of lawfare for investigating supposed illegal acts. So I think it's unified all the judges and prosecutors, because each group there, they have conservative and progressive associations, and they've all come together and they've said that these attacks on the judiciary are like the ones that were happening in Poland at the time, and which are very worrying. And I think definitely the European Union must take measures before it goes any further.
I think the biggest thing that he really did that annoyed Spaniards was this collaboration with the Catalan separatists, with Puigdemont. And, you know, he was basically dealing with the devil.
Yeah.
And, okay, that politicians lie, etc., that they have, you know, ways and means, etc., but the mere fact that he dealt with these guys is a severe blow to the rest of Spain.
Yeah, but you
can... It's a real no-no.
Because at the time when they had the referendum in Barcelona, which was so they were told they couldn't hold the referendum, it was the whole situation, it was an illegal referendum, etc. But of course, Rajoy was president. I have had arguments with my friends in London about this, because the way that then the Catalans played it, as like, we have been oppressed by the jackboot of Rajoy, and it was like, guys, this is Catalan sort of fake news coming in over to you. It's certainly not a throwback to 60 years ago or 70 years ago.
No.
But again, Sanchez has done this deal, and of course it's come back to haunt him.
Absolutely. Basically, Sanchez wanted to govern at any cost. He said that he had to govern no matter what, because he basically, his motto is, it's either him or the far right. That's his kind of motto to convince the other parties. Basically, if I fall, Spain will become governed by he calls the PP and Vox the extreme right and the far right. Basically, he's putting them both in the same box.
I remember just before the elections, they were touting Vox as Francoists. Yeah. We're ushering fascism of the Franco style just prior to the elections.
And let's go back to that 50th anniversary since death, because it's not the Constitution, because that's Suarez, isn't it? In 78.
We're talking about the death.
Yeah.
Of...
So we're talking about death. So this whole trumpeting and the whole the speeches is a little distasteful, isn't it? Would you say?
I think it's opportunistic, because it's always worked. Whenever the government has conflicts or they're low in the polls or whatever, they love to bring out the past and Franco and the war. It's a kind of like perfect excuse to divide and to open old wounds and things that the Constitution and the transition healed. Now they want to kind of dig up the past, and they do it just before the last general election. They took him out of his tomb in Madrid, and it's been a constant thing. So It's very sad in a way, because for years both the PP and the PSOE had left that behind, and it was just to look forward.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, yesterday, García Page, the president of La Mancha, he's the only socialist that has a majority in a regional government, and he's always been a strong critic of Sánchez. And he says that, and his brother was also a politician who left the party because he didn't agree with the direction Sánchez was going on. And he says that he finds it very sad, that the division that there is, and that there can't be any bipartisan agreements like they were before, and this polarization that Sánchez is causing, and also pacting with Bildu, who we all know their terrorist past, until this day they don't condemn ETA. He said that all of that is erosioning the constitution, it's erosioning the democratic spirit of the past 40 years, and he said that he's very concerned about what's going on, and he's raised the voice several times, and Sánchez has, of course, always tried to say, oh, well, you're not socialist, you should be in a right in this. But yeah, the proof is in the pudding. He's the only regional president that has an absolute majority, so of course that allows him to speak more freely and to criticise the party.
95278 4000, the phone number if you want to get involved with this morning's viewpoint with you, of course. And for the next hour and 50 minutes, take a quick break and then back with more viewpoints.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Joined by Richard Cowell and Claudia De Torre. To the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Johnny Benavista. Hi.
Good morning, Johnny Benavista. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Can I just say you play my favourite music? You've got the best choice in music apart from the show.
Okay, but fair enough. Well, anyways, I you know. So that's now I feel a butt coming on. So here we go.
But no, it was me that referred to Trump as the common sense president.
Yes,
amongst other things. I don't know if you're aware, but in the last 24 hours or so, Trump offered all the military that refused the dreaded jab to be reinstated on full back pay. Are you aware of that?
I wasn't. There was a thing about the whole you didn't need to have your COVID jabs, for example, for green cards as well. And also there's been that whole the whole dismantling of the diversity as well, hasn't there, with the US military?
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it just goes back to the point where I refer to Trump as being a common sense president, the president that people want. He treats people the right way. I mean, he pardoned the pro-lifers. I mean, that was disgraceful, the way they were treated. He pardoned the January 6th hostages, let's call them. I was a bit surprised he pardoned all of them, I must have confessed, but there we go. As far as Biden, good riddance. And Kamala was never destined to be president.
Mm.
She hasn't got the wherewithal to be president.
Just a quick one. What was your thing? Because there seems to be a rash of pardons on both sides. I mean, Biden pardons his entire family and anybody else who might be in the firing line of, if pardon that wasn't perhaps the correct parlance to use, but anybody who might be under suspicion when a Trump president comes in, so Fauci, all that sort of stuff, and all the members of his family and whatever. And then Trump, you know, does a blanket pardon on those involved with the Capitol Hill riots, etc.
Well, I mean, let's go back to the Biden pardons, pardoning his whole family. I mean, anybody with half a modicum of common sense and would say that is absolutely disgraceful, because he's pardoning them for any past and future things that come out. I mean, a pardon is almost an admission of guilt, and you can refuse a pardon. You know, if you accept a pardon, then surely it's it leads people to believe that there is a reason for you requiring a pardon.
Mm.
And in the case of the Biden family, that is absolutely 100% true. They're all implicit in receiving millions from China, Ukraine. It's all coming out. Don't worry, it'll all come out. And Steve Ritson, I hope you're listening.
Well, he probably... yes, indeed. It's a bit like Lytham Saman playing their Joker, if you remember. It's a knockout. Here's me pardon, but there you go. Thank you for your call in. As always, good
Thank
to
you.
What is true also is that was it the FBI director, was it Kash Patel?
Yeah.
They said, you know, I have this black book and I'm going to go after these people. You know, Bolton, for example, who I particularly don't like. I think he's a horrendous sort of man. Mm-hmm. You know, his security detail has been taken away by Trump. And so, you know, he's done quite a lot of things. So to a certain extent, I understand why one or two people might have had some sort of pardons against prosecution. But it's quite extraordinary that, you know, people got injured, policemen got injured on January the 6th.
Yeah.
And these guys get off scot-free. So the rule of law is a question of, shall we say, ethics and taking law into account.
But again, this is the situation with, as we said before, he's going to make these sweeping changes. He got onto this, he's got on with it. He came on with this, you know, Jonathan calls him the common sense president, but he came in with this distrust of legacy media, of the fact that the judiciary system has been weaponized against him, you know, and so he's going to, you know, he's got his groups such as the Proud Boys and everybody else who, you know, the American Shaman and all that. He said, I'm going to go out and buy a gun. You can see the reason why. Although it's a sort of shambolic scene and doesn't look good for anybody, both Democrats and the Democrats have been absolutely silent in this first week. I think they're still in shock since they lost so heavily, you know, that they lost the election. But it just goes to show that nobody was kind of sure what was going to happen in his first. In his first week. I mean, there's the whole thing about that Project 2025, wasn't it? You know, and the whole dismantling of the justice system.
Which he says, you know, it has nothing to do with.
Yeah. But, you know.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows indeed? Claudio, any thoughts on that one?
Well, I personally don't agree on the January the 6th pardons, especially for the most violent criminals, especially because Trump is a very pro-police and law and order. And so I think it's quite a contradiction to pardon people who assaulted officers when you pretend
to... He just assaulted the microphone, by the way. Yeah.
So, yeah, in that, I don't agree with that. I always say with Trump, there's certain things I terribly agree on and others that I terribly disagree on. So
I think that's in general. I mean, yeah. Speaking to quite a lot of Americans, etc., they say, well, you know, out of the 10 things he says he's going to do, you know, I agree with 5, I disagree with 5. Yeah. But the 5 I do agree on, you know, he has my votes for that. And that goes for, you know, serious businessmen, for example, with tax breaks.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. They say, well, yeah, or law and order or whatever. There's a lot of Trump that people disagree with.
And it's been very interesting to see the way that the most high profile obviously are the Metas, are the Apples, the Amazons, the Googles, which are getting on side, being seen. But it's the other business people as well, isn't it, who have her now? Because somebody said the other day, you used to see mega caps when you used to fly. You used to see them in the economy section, and now you're seeing them in the business section, the first class section, because you have to be seen to be supporting Donald.
Just an interesting aside. I know if in the inauguration ceremony you saw this Melania with her hat, etc. And also she's been much more involved in the inauguration and the events than Trump 1.0.
Right.
And apparently Jeff Bezos and Amazon, they're doing a documentary on her and paying her $14 million for it. So that's why she seems to be much more involved. There's actual one of these drone cameras, etc., going
in a hat.
In the hat. Yeah. So this is why she's actually been more involved this time than previously.
Yeah, there were interesting scenes at the inauguration, especially of Mark Zuckerberg taking peeks at Lauren Sanchez, as she had a very revealing attire, which was interesting.
Okay, I'm glad you pick up on the stuff that is important there, Claudia. Indeed. 952-78-4000. Let's go back to some of the comments we're getting in here. Donald Trump is not a serious... Oh, here we go. This is what I'm for. So, Trump ends DEI. Thank you. In a US military and reinstates troops who refuse COVID vaccines. President also signs an order to eliminate gender radicalism in the military and seeks to develop missile defense system. Trump signed a series of executive orders on Monday that remove diversity, equality, and inclusion from the US military, reinstate thousands of troops who were kicked out for refusing COVID-19 vaccines during the pandemic, and one that appeared to be aimed at transgender troops. Early on Monday, Pete Hey, Seth, thank you. I've really got to get new teeth. Who narrowly secured enough votes to become defence secretary referred to the names of Confederate generals that were once used for two key bases during remarks to reporters. As he entered the Pentagon, his first full day on the job, Trump signed the executive orders while flying back from Miami to Washington. One executive order signed by Trump was titled Eliminating Gender Radicalism in the Military. It appears to be a reference to transgender troops in the military, but a text of the order was not immediately available. During his first term, Trump announced he would ban transgender troops from serving in the military. Didn't fully follow through with the ban. His administration froze their recruitment while allowing serving personnel to remain. Biden overturned the decision. When he took office, about 1.3 million active personnel serve in the military in the States. This is the Department of Defense. While transgender rights advocates say there are as many as 15,000 transgender service members. Officials say the number's in the low thousands. When Trump announced his first ban in 2017, he said the military needed to focus on decisive and overwhelming victory without being burdened by the tremendous medical costs and disruption of having transgender personnel. So there you go. So that's
Well, he did. One of his first things that he did was say, you know, there are only male and female genders. And that's it.
Yeah, but they also said they were going to. There was also a thing about treating life from conception, which is quite interesting because obviously at conception we're all female until the chromosomes kick in. So that's quite. So he was actually yeah. Anyway, let's move on from there. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Proficial. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. I'd like to hear your viewpoints on this or any particular subject. Good morning to Jamie as well, who's listening in, sending me a hearty greeting. Good to have you with us. 952-784-4000. The poll has now gone up to 36% thinks he's doing a good job, and 64 think he's doing a bad job. So that's an ongoing poll we're having here about that first week with Donald Trump in the hot seat, as it were.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Just going back to Spain, I just want to talk a little bit about this Patriots of Europe meeting they're having in Madrid. I think it's next month. It's happening. Any thoughts? This is the Europe's Parliament's. Here we go. Europe's Parliament's largest far right bloc will hold its first summit in Madrid next week with Hungarian Prime Minister, everybody's favourite Viktor Orban, and France's Marine Le Pen in audience. This is Vox said. This Patriots for Europe are meeting on February the 7th and the 8th with Santiago Abascal to outline the strategy for the coming months. So the group has realigned the EU far right and become the Parliament's third largest force. So any thoughts on sort of Vox playing a... Because he likes a rally, doesn't he, Abascal? Let's face it, when he can turn the microphone the right way around.
Yeah, he was chosen a few months ago, the leader of Patriots Europe, which was a EU parliamentary group that includes Marine Le Pen, Viktor Orban. Yeah. So, but it's not the first time they've had a meeting in Madrid. Like last year or the year before, they had a meeting, but of course he hadn't been elected president of this group, so now he's kind of be like the host, let's say.
Would Farage be joining?
Well, no, he's not. He's not in that group.
Yeah, it's a little too extremist for reform.
Yeah, no, but also it's an EU wide group, and obviously,
Mr.
Brexit.
He led them out, sort of, and when he came waving their flags, of course,
exactly.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that one goes down with it just adds a little more spice to the mezcla, doesn't it? Basically, when you have something like this happening.
But do you think Vox would increase their votes against the PP, or how do you see that panning out? Because they're just cancelling each other out. around the
system? Well, it's interesting to see over the years how they've gone. Like, in the last regional elections, they did well, and both the PP and Vox incremented their vote percentage. But yet in the last general election, where the PP won, but they won by a much lower margin than all the polls showed, because all the polls showed that PP and Vox would have a large majority and be able to govern, which didn't happen. So they fell short just by a few seats. So I think, like, it depends, because there are certain people who vote for Vox that will not vote for PP ever, because they feel kind of like this. They consider the PP like blue socialists, as they call them. They feel that they have the same policies,
and
exactly the centrality, and that they agree on too many things, and that in Europe they vote on the same things.
And also, Fischer doesn't have the personality that Sánchez has.
Of course.
It is, we are in an era of personality voting.
Personality voting.
You know, if Feijóo was, you know, 10 years younger and another head taller, maybe.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't have that.
Yeah, exactly. I know many, especially, well, I've heard it more from kind of middle-aged women, and you are, so why do you vote for Sánchez? Oh, because he's handsome. No,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
It's this, because it's this kind of...
That whole... Women of a certain age are voting for...
Oh, indeed, indeed. The statistics show it, like, out of age groups, the biggest Sánchez leads by far with women voters, especially over 40.
I would see, you know, this. Perhaps they should recall dashing moustached Aznar then back to the party, because, you know, his or you know, or
just unleash like porn star, didn't he?
Yeah.
just unleash Julio Iglesias to that's right. We're coming. Thankfully, on that note, thank you, Richard. On that note, we're going to the end of the first half of this morning's Viewpoint. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. You can WhatsApp me on +34645996795. Just a quick comment in there saying that the Alfonso Rueda could be the next PP leader, slicker and calmer, quote unquote. So anyway, with those, but we'll leave you with that one as we go to the national international news, and then back for more Viewpoints in the second half.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint. Always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by Claudia De La Torre and also Richard Cowell. If you want to get involved with today's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 996795. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. We were chatting about the way that Spain is going, and we're looking at the first week of President Trump, looking at some of the more bits and pieces coming in as well. It's Pedro Sanchez, thank you very much. Chinese New Year. Okay, Trump wasn't overwhelmingly voted into power. He obtained 49.9% of those who voted, beating Harris by 1.5%, the third smallest margin in 129 years. We are talking other things about the first week of President Trump's presidency. Looking at the pictures of the this morning, the statements from Iran as well, saying that if Trump and or Israel attacks the nuclear facilities, it would be crazy. You have thoughts on what's happening in Iran, Richard? I know very
well. Well, I mean, I now I don't do it anymore, but I've been travelling to Iran since 1989. Mm. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a great country and nice people. I think tackling Iran is not the same as tackling Iraq. I think it'd be very difficult to do that. The technology that Iran has is much more superior, as was seen with the Israeli attacks. You know, there's going to be those three waves of fighters, of the F-35 stealth bomb. Actually, you know, it was F-35 stealth bombers that were going to go into Iran in three waves.
Yeah.
And only the first wave went in because they were pinged. So the and from what I'm led to believe, it wasn't the Russian defense missiles that they have there. It was Iranian homemade missiles that actually pinged the stealth F-35s. So this is why about 100 to 70 kilometers away from the Iranian border, they dropped their missiles and turned back to Israel and didn't set off the second and third wave. That was to destroy the nuclear facilities, destroy the oil and gas infrastructure. The other thing about it, I think is not a good idea to go into Iran, is that if they do that, Iran can quite easily unleash a whole lot of these hypersonic missiles that are practically impossible to stop over, let's say, Saudi Arabian oil infrastructure or Kuwaiti infrastructure or Qatar infrastructure. And that would cause a huge economic problem throughout the whole world.
Mm.
So there's a whole lot of reasons why I don't think they should. And the other side about it is that, you know, I don't believe that anyone really would like a war other than Netanyahu and his cabinet.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, people are saying, well, Trump's the guy, you know, Trump is the president who's never started a war.
I mean, the Iranians most certainly don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And we've seen there are a lot of back channels to and fro between the United States and Iran. And there always has been. Actually, interesting enough, when, do you remember, was it George Bush and Axis of Evil and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Iran, the Iranians and Americans used to meet every month in Geneva. And they would talk about various things, particularly terrorism, Al-Qaeda and everything like that. And the Iranians took actually a leading role in defeating a lot of these terrorist organizations and threats. After Bush classified them as axes of evil, they said, well, okay, if you're going to be like that, that's it. And they stopped the dialogue. And then there was a rapid increase on terrorist threat. So the Iranians have always had a back, like at the moment, they're having back channels with Saudi Arabia. They talk quite openly to each other.
Sure.
Iran is now a full member of BRICS. Saudi Arabia would like to be a full member of BRICS. They've applied. Turkey has applied as well, but that's a bit on hold at the moment because of their action in northern Syria. So tackling Iran, I think, A, we'd be, Israel by itself can't do it. It has to have the United States together
sure.
to do it.
Yeah.
If they do it, I don't think it's going to be an easy task. I think there's going to be a lot of repercussions with it. Iran has signed an agreement with Russia that covers, Iran has an agreement with China already in place, but it's very much more commercial oriented. The one that was signed just before Trump's inauguration was a much thorough agreement covering commercial, but also covering military and other aspects.
Yeah,
down even to tourism. So it would be very difficult, I think, for someone to go. And I think it's very unwise for anyone to go in Iran. I know that the Pentagon, they do these war games, so mock-ups, what happens if. And very, very few times has there been a win for the, shall we say, the collective West or NATO stand or whatever you want to call it. Because, of course, if United States go in, they will bring in NATO. You know, Britain will be there defending democracy or whatever that is. France will also join in defending democracy and everything else. So, you know, Europe will be dragged into that war as well. And that's probably not a very good thing, especially because Europe is probably the weakest economic block around in the world, shall we say, of the major ones. So I think it's unlikely, but you never know. I mean, you look at the ways wars start, or the Second World War started, for example. It doesn't take much for something to just spark off.
But I mean, it'd be very. I mean, you say Israel is not going to go in against Iran on its own, and you know, because of as well as that. I mean, otherwise, it sort of looks like the Netanyahu is spinning the random country to invade generator.
Well,
if you like, if he said, you know, he's had a crack at Lebanon, he's had a crack at, you know, Hamas, which is still an operation because you cannot militarily defeat an ideology.
Well, this is it.
It was proved with the British and against the IRA. It's been proved, unfortunately, with the Spanish against ETA. You can't physically wipe every person off the planet. Well, and if you have
to make, yeah, you have to make peace with your enemies. Yeah. You don't make peace with your friends. And we know that Netanyahu wrote a book, Fighting Terrorism, where, you know, invading 7 countries in 5 years, including Libya, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Iran was the final piece of that puzzle. So he's always, Iran's always been the sort of the target for Netanyahu over his policies. But again, I think, and United States has followed him, has supported him blindly. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the cabinet that Trump has, there are a lot of Israeli firsters, a lot of neocons. You have Stefanik, who is, I think she is the ambassador to the United Nations. Mike Huckabee as well. These are Christian evangelists, and they believe in the biblical right of the Jews to have Israel. And you know, so there's a whole lot of pieces up in the air going on at the moment. I hope that nothing happens and common sense is found, and there's a way to find a rapprochement between the countries, because I don't think a war with Iran will do anyone any good.
Absolutely not. Just going back to a quote for a little bit previous. We were looking for the Abraham Lincoln quote, Claudia, you remember. Thank you to Janice Penn, who was sent through. You can fool all the people some of the time, and you can fool some of the people all the time, but you cannot fool all the people all the time.
Fantastic quote. It never gets old.
Now, if you want to get involved with the, show.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Is the phone number. We're talking a variety of subjects today. We were talking about Trump. We've been talking about Spain as well. Just a quick one, Moshe, here, Claudia, because I know you shoot off in a minute. Sanchez and saying he doesn't want. I know this is. We talk about high and mighty thoughts about everything else, Claudio. But this situation, he said he didn't want anybody outside the EU having any property, and he's saying that all the. I mean, you dabble in the markets. What's your reaction to somebody like Sanchez saying, oh, and by the way, you know, you awful non-EU speculators of property, how dare you be taking money out of houses away from these poor Spanish people on the streets, holding their infants, cradling them in swaddling clothes. As soon as I said that, of course, the phones go off, but off you go, Claudio.
Well, I just think it's a very populist rhetoric, and it's worrying because it's, of course, a message just spread like wildfire. And the day after, the Financial Times, The Economist, so many foreign media outlets were commenting on this. He's already gone through with banning foreigners being able to get a golden visa.
Damn,
which I'm not sure if it's it helps. I'm not sure if preventing a millionaire from the States being able to get a visa to acquire a property is going to help lower down the prices for average apartments. I just find it's just a very populist measure which isn't going to do anything. Sanchez, another thing he's been doing, he's been promising for years that he was going to do social housing. We don't see any social housing being built. So there's all these populist measures that are being said, but which I don't think are going to help whatsoever. Do we have a problem with people buying houses? I don't think that is the problem. I think the problem is the lack of new housing. Also, the lack with the squatters, that puts off many people from renting their houses because they fear that they won't, if they get people who won't pay their rents and have arrears and they can't get them out, well, of course, that raises the prices, and there's less and less rental properties on the market. So I think that needs to be handled. But of course, that won't come down well with Podemos and the other coalition. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Getting against the lines. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning. Just going back a tad, your guest there said that the Israel raid on Iran was unsuccessful. There's only been like official statements from Iran and from Israel, and Iran are never going to admit to what happened. But I think he's way off there. And you being like to interview a few historians and endeavors of people gone past, I think in a few years' time, people will look back. That was one of the greatest raids ever performed, an air raid. And what Israel did with those, first of all, the first lot went out, F-15s, F-16s, and F-35s. They flew across, my demographics are not perfect here, but when you leave Israel, you go across Jordan and out towards Iran. They flew without being detected, went up and over or around and came in the back door. They refueled in midair. Those jets have only got a range of about 1,000. This is a 2,000 kilometer distance. They refueled, they struck, came in the back door, came through, took out docks, took out missile silos, took out fuel depots. They done everything they wanted to do in seconds and then went back out again. And one of the, when we look back and see what they did, and if you go on any of these like Blue Angels as a aviationist on YouTube and listen to some of these elite pilots tell you what they did, for you to sit there and think that they never got near Iran or didn't do any damage, or Iran are so sophisticated they knew those Israelis are coming, you're even with an official statement from Iran, you're a million miles away from there. And they literally neutered Iran, and Iran have probably never been so weak, and they're not as strong as people think they are. And whether they attack Iran or not, I think at some stage they're going to, and buy them off the map. But mashallah, that's the way it goes, isn't it? You live that life, you're gonna die that life. But I don't think an awful lot of people are going to feel too sorry for them.
You actually should say inshallah, not mashallah, if you knew Arabic.
No, inshallah means God willing. Mashallah means it's God's will.
Oh, I don't think it's God's will to kill people, but anyway, that's up to you. But
hang on a second. If you're religious and you speak Arabic, if someone's shouting Allahu Akbar when they're walking around with a bomb, they're doing it in God's name. If they say inshallah, they are then hoping that God will allow them to carry out that mission, whether it's not necessarily war mission, anything. But when they say mashallah, that means it was God's will. If a woman has a baby and her husband shouts mashallah, it was God's will. So when these things happen to the Arabs, mashallah, that's God's will. You can't claim that God is almighty, the all power, the all seeing, the all being, because if your country gets blown to smithereens, then you have to say, mashallah, it's God's will. You can't separate the two. If he's going to blow you up, he's going to blow you up. If you believe that everything is done in the name of Muhammad, in Allah, then you're going to get whatever comes to you is in the name of God, as far as I'm concerned.
Peter, thank you for your
okay.
Thank you for the call in there. Going for a break and then back with another viewpoint.
Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at TRE.radio is the email. Going live to the lines, excuse me. I'm only calling live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpe.
Morning, Gil.
Morning. First, I want to agree with the previous caller about Iran. I think Iran has is much weaker than many people say. First remark about he was correcting the Arabic. Okay, so I must correct him, because to say God is great in Arabic is Al-Akbar with a K. If he says Al-Akbar, that means God is news, and that doesn't mean much. Okay, so now that I've corrected his Arabic, I agree with what he said about Iran. It's very weak. Israel destroyed all its air defenses. I mean, it literally could go there tomorrow, and just all the planes in the sky can do whatever they want. Yeah, they can. They have no defense. Yeah, And of course, they want the backing of the Americans. It's not so easy. There are a lot of things going on. Well, first, there's a lot of opposition in Iran. Lots of people there are not happy with the regime. Yeah, there's we know about that. And in addition to the youngsters who are not happy with what is going on, with all these Islamic restrictions, there are a lot of different ethnic groups in Iran, and they want independence. They're not happy about the situation. Only about half of Iran is Persian. The rest is Azeris and Baluchians and Caspians and Arabs and whatnot. Even Khamenei, he's actually an Azeri. He's not Persian. And at home, he speaks Azeri. Yeah, so they're going to fall apart, just from all their different ethnicities.
Okay, Gil, thank you for your call in on that one. Good to have you. So, what do you think we're going to go with that one then? What do you think the end game will be with that one at the moment?
Well, I think everybody's just waiting. They're just hoping that Iran will just dissolve by itself, and then they won't have to do anything. See,
we could argue that we waited for Iran to dissolve by itself since 1979, when Khomeini died. We thought that was going to.
Yes, that's right. But it does take many years. Look, communism lasted for 70 years in Russia. In China, it lasted for 50 years. It all takes time till there's a new generation. Yeah, there's a time scale for this. Yeah. And I think we're about the same time scale now, so about 45 years. So I think it will end soon. All signs are that it's going to end soon.
Gil, thank you very much for your call in there. 952 784 4000. This is the number studio. I can just say the Viscos thinking this Al Andalus thing will be gone in 20 years, 700 years later. But there you go. You're smiling, Richard. I hope that's because,
I think everyone is entitled to their point of view, but it really depends on what sort of information they have. If you rely on Western press, then you're going to get a certain perspective. If you've actually been to these sort of countries and you know these people, etc., you get probably a totally different perspective. I respect other people's point of view. Whether I agree with them, that's, it's the whole point of this panel, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can discuss about it. Now, I quite frankly don't agree with the last two callers at all on their estimation of what is, how strong is Iran and how easy it is to fight. I mean, what is clear is that we've seen that in the press, everyone used to believe that the military force that Israel used to have was unconquerable. And, people did believe that they'd go into Hamas and wipe them out very, very quickly. Hezbollah as well, wipe them out very, very, very quickly. These things haven't happened. It's not easy. And I think it's a bit more complicated. You need to have probably quite a lot more facts than what is actually presented in Western media to really fully understand the nature of a country. I agree. Iran is made up of a whole lot of different regions, similar to Spain.
Yep.
Yep. And I don't see Spain disintegrating. What we do see in Iran is people like Pezeshkian, who is the leader, well, supreme leader is Khamenei, but the Pezeshkian, he is quite a progressive guy. He is a cardiologist. He's very intelligent. He's well respected by the people. And there are reforms taking place at the moment. They're gradual reforms. They're not sort of trumpeted, but there are reforms. If women want to go bareheaded, without a scarf, etc., they can do it. VPNs are no longer needed. Things like WhatsApp, etc., are now fully available. So things are changing in the country, and for the better. And it's about time that things do change. But I'd rather have an internal change than one that is forced by a third party. For example, the United States.
Well, in that way, it has the reverse effect. Sometimes it can actually just bring everybody against that. The perceived outside.
Well, you see, the thing is that people say quite flippantly, "Oh, well, the people are against the government." Now, if you went to the UK and you probably went to Spain and ask a poll of people, do you like your government?
Yeah.
Majority say, "Well, no."
I'm not very happy with my government at all. Yeah,
exactly. So you've got to be extremely careful when you actually sort of voice these opinions based on limited knowledge. Now, one thing is wishful thinking. The other is probably something approximating to a fact. And I think, again, if you look at Western press, etc., you're probably going to get a very biased point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I would like to say as well is the perspectives that people have. If you're in the West, you have a different perspective, a different philosophy on life than you if you are in the Middle East or if you're in China.
Sure.
Or if you're in Russia. Now, China, Russia, Middle East, you know, they have a long-term perspective of life. Whereas in Europe, we are short-termism. You know, our prime minister is there for 4 years or 5 years, whatever. The president of the United States is there for 5 years. Then you get another guy, he changes everything. In China, for example, you have a long-term person, Xi Jinping. In Russia, again, long-term person, Vladimir Putin. These things, in Iran, for example, you have the supreme leader, a long-term. So there's consistency. So neither one is right, neither one is wrong. But you have to view things from their perspectives rather than by purely Western eyes. So when people say, oh, we disagree with the government, you have to actually know a little bit more of the detail of why.
Got a WhatsApp coming in here. It says, Dear Giles, and three exclamation marks. So listen up, lad. Just put the bottle down, okay? There comes a time when if a country like Israel has to destroy all of its neighbours to feel secure, then I love the quote from a previous listener that comes to mind. Fool me once, shame on me. Israelis kill also in the name of God, since they believe they are chosen by God. Israel can't even defeat Gaza, and they think they can defeat Iran. It is not true that Baluchi and Kurds want separation. As Gil said, if Khamenei is Turkish, what a better example to show minorities are respected than when they hold the highest offices. Iranians are united as Iranian tribes, Turkish, Azerbaijan, Kurds, and Persians are all Iranians. Similarly, President... I'm going to get this wrong. Pezeshkian. Thank you so much. Pezeshkian is Azerbaijani. I rest my case. That's from Zoe. So,
well, obviously, I guess this person's probably actually travelled to this country, so knows a little bit about it.
Yes.
As I said, you know, we tend to be fed by Western press.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that Western press is extremely biased. But like most media is very biased. It always has been. There's always an agenda behind. And it's very difficult nowadays to find a newspaper, for example, that doesn't have that sort of bias. So, again, have to be very careful when you're stating facts. And I still stand behind the Israeli attack on Iran. Yes, they damaged the Syrian, and the flight path that I think was Peter mentioned, I don't think it was correct, but they damaged the Syrian air defense and then the Iraqi air defense. Systems, but then where was the second wave? Where was the third wave? And then, obviously, if they created so much destruction, where's the photographic evidence that I'm sure Israel would use for public relations, internal as well as external? It would have been a great victory, but you don't really hear too much about that.
952-78-4000. Just a quick one. Clyde is still in the building. I just had a thought the other day. This was going completely different. A thing about Gen Zers in the Times saying that they would quite like to be led by a strong leader. I mean, saying that they'd be quite happy with a dictatorship
That's a very interesting. And it's a phenomenon all around the world because the youth at the moment, they feel that democracy has failed them. They feel that they can't buy a house, that they can't have a good paying job or have a family. So that's why I think that we're in very dangerous times also because people are so disillusioned with the system. They feel that the system isn't working for them. So they're kind of like open to...
A strong leader.
To a strong leader.
If we're looking at something with the 80th anniversary of Auschwitz yesterday, I mean, they've been very quick to link this all in together, saying, you see, be careful what you wish for, strong leaders. You know, we're going to repeat... It's the 20s repeating the 30s, if you like. And the problem is that a lot of people obviously haven't had to, in the West at least, haven't had to live under a dictatorship and know exactly what it's like. You get that kind of...
Exactly.
You get that in Spain. Like, oh, well, in Franco, everybody had a job and everybody knew their place and they, at least we all had, you know, we
you could leave your front door open.
You could leave your front door open. And
well, interestingly, I've heard this from people of many different countries. I've heard Romanians saying that there was more prosperity with Ceausescu. I've heard people in Brazil saying that in the military dictatorship in Brazil, there was law and order and there wasn't all the crime and unrest that they are now. So I've heard people both on the left and right and different people kind of like idolize past times. It's nothing new. people tend to idolize, to kind of like have reminiscing,
romanticizing.
Well, it's interesting because depending on who you hear, like I've heard people of all walks of life saying that they. So I respect older people who have lived those times, and if they said that they liked it or they disliked it, well, they've lived it and they've judged it. But then when you have a 20-year-old saying, it's like, sorry, you didn't live that time, so you have no idea what you're talking about. So I find it's difficult to respect their judgment because simply they haven't lived it. If it's a 90-year-old who's lived that time and they had an opinion, well, you might not agree with it, but you can say your opinion is legitimate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think it's a problem all around the world, all around the Western world. That standard of living is going down. That is true. Income inequality is all level high in the whole Western world. People can't, but natality and birth rates are plummeting because people can't afford to have kids with the uncertainty that there is. People, also cultural changes that now the youth is very hedonistic and they want to spend their money on Ibiza and Mykonos and not on babies and nappies.
Really? Who'd have thought that?
Yeah.
How dare they?
Exactly. So there are cultural shifts also. It's not only financial.
But perhaps we only take this with a pinch of proverbial because, I mean, if you look at the... We've always had these sort of things. And you know, referendums, I mean, that, you know, we know where we go with that. And, you know, the British famously voted for Boaty McBoatface. You have to be very careful what you read into because you have to hope that common sense... You know, if you say to most people, you know, the government's rubbish, it's much easier to go, oh, well, it's just all, you know, modern life is rubbish, quote unquote, than say, well, this is a structure and the whole thing. To say that we need a strong leader. I mean, do you think that there is there's a disconnect between politics and the real world, and maybe to a certain extent that is why people are have gone for Trump, because he looks like the sort of figure, and there's all this talk about, you know, Baron Trump coming in as well, and him appealing to that certain disaffected male youth who are saying
I think also the type of politician that you have nowadays is a professional politician. He's not a person who's had to work for a living necessarily or manage or run a company. So if you don't do that, you find it very difficult to understand how your policies affect people.
Yeah.
And I feel that politicians are too remote. I feel in Europe in general, for example, if you look at the European Union, it's totally and utterly disjointed. There's no commonality, be it on the finance side, on the judiciary side, or whatever. It's all very, very scattered here. And it's very difficult for a young person to actually sort of know where to go.
But perhaps that is because we don't have those great sweeping moments and movements that we used to have before. So you could say, I wish to have a socialist utopia. Or I wish to have the free markets unleashed. I wish to have a communist situation, which, you know. But if you look at that as a period of time, say in Europe, that's only between sort of the 20s and the 30s and maybe the 50s and 60s. But previous to that, especially in the UK, I mean, the Whigs and the Tories, you know, it was entirely self-serving. So this whole idea of...
But democracy is very young.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the actual ideal of democracy is actually quite young. But it's a system. I mean, you look at American politics, for example.
Yeah.
You know, people say it's the greatest democracy and this and the other. Well, it's not. It's a lobbyoctomy. It's run by the lobbyists. I don't know what the word lobbyoctomy or whatever.
Right.
I just think in general people are sick with the system.
Right.
And that the traditional ruling parties, both conservative or socialist in the last 50 years in Europe, obviously have made mistakes. And I think also Brexit was a turning point that, for example, the EU didn't really take note after Brexit and they didn't make any reforms or they didn't really change anything. It's just things have just continued how it was. And the, for example, Keir Starmer, or Rishi Sunak, well, they're very similar on many things. If you think about it, there's not really much difference between Labour and the Conservatives. They are certain, but on general, let's say their fiscal policy, their foreign policy. So I just think it's easy for someone to come and be radically opposed to all of that and say, oh, we're going to, even if they're not going to, but we're going to have a brighter, better future, and people will buy it just as a protest vote because they're just sick of the traditional parties.
But then when you get into the situation where these people get voted in, for example, if Trump 2.0 gets it, or if reform get in, and then they can't do anything about it, and they get stagnant, then people just give up. Then we're back, you know. And
it's very easy to be in opposition.
Yeah.
But when you actually have to do it, it's
same as Podemos in Spain. Yes. They reached, they went from 80 deputies. Well, just 8 years ago, Podemos had 80 deputies, and now they had 4, and they're fighting to survive. And Ciudadanos also, who got 70 deputies, completely disappeared.
Yeah.
They went from governing in Madrid and being kingmakers in Andalucía to completely. So that just shows that the youth are completely unfaithful when it comes to voting. And it's not like before where they'd vote unconditionally for the same party for 40 years. Like if it was a football club, they had that loyalty. Now people don't care. From one year to the other, they'll just vote you one, and then the next they'll just be like, F off, we have other priorities.
Yeah, you used to vote as your father voted.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, completely. Yeah. Fascinating indeed. Right, quick break and then back for the final 12 minutes of Viewpoints.
Viewpoints on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Claudio De La Torre has left the building. He had to dash off to a meeting, but as I said before, he's a bit like an impact player. He comes in, he makes his statements, and off he goes. But I've still got Richard with me for the last 15 minutes or so. If you wish to get your viewpoint across, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Now, if you're finding all this a little hard going, and of course Stephen Ritson is following me with Europe Today between 12 and 2 o'clock, so you can get your tackle in first, as saying goes. Well, in the second half, following Stephen between 2 and 4, Selena is away, so Alan is stamping into the breach, and he'll be talking to Mark Rowlands about living with your dog. Is your dog living a fulfilled life? Is my dog a good dog? Your dog is a very... Any dogs listening, you're all very good boys. Any cats listening, who... they don't really care anyway what I say. Meanwhile, at 3.25, Alan speaks to Spencer Lee about a Liverpool life in 80 chapters. Spencer Lee celebrated his 80th birthday with the publication of the most personal of the 40 books he's authored. Spencer has raided the archives and diaries to create 80 chapters that reflect a life to writing and talking about pop music. That should be quite interesting. A bit of that being from Liverpool. Hannah is with us with TRE in the afternoon. Her guests include, she's talking to Steve Bridger about our spiritual being. Then she's chatting to Peter Stanfield about the Yardbirds. Blimey, that should be for good fun. So that'll be kind of talking about Jeff Beck, Clapton and Jimmy Page. And at 25 to 6, Hannah chats to Caroline Topperman for a search for about her family history. That's all before Howard Brereton joins us with Spain Today. And then it is the repeat of today's show, of this show. You can catch us again between 7 and 9 and go over the best bits, if that's not an oxymoron or whatever else. Now, meanwhile, the youth don't vote. We're talking about this thing about the young people saying they want a strong leader. The youth don't vote, so how can they expect change or policy to favour them? Barron Trump is more like Lurch. That's a bit. He's a tall sort of fellow. Looking at some more bits coming in on the internet. Poll's still going, but looking at some more bits and pieces coming in there. If you want to get involved with the show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
There's the way to get involved with the show. Richard.
Yeah, one of the things that came up actually today was this DeepSeek. Mm. You know, the impact.
Yeah.
NVIDIA's lost, what, $500 trillion? Is it 598 or something like that? Billion dollars. Excuse me. I was in the UK actually over Christmas time, and it was very nice. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I'm glad I'm living over here. One of my sort of relatives, he's deeply involved in, no pun intended,
yes,
deeply involved in AI, etc., and running his own company and coding and etc., doing that. And he's saying that we're not far from reaching the tipping point of AI, where it starts to become uncontrollable.
Right.
Which is rather dark and scary. It's like, you know, I suppose what we know is probably very little compared to what actually is out there as far as technology. So I was just wondering, you know, what people's...
Am I allowed to do my Rumsfeld thing and go, there are known knowns and known unknowns?
Another very good quote.
Yeah, thank you. One of my favourite ones of all time. Yeah,
absolutely, yes. But it seems to me that, you know, when you're of a certain age, I think AI is actually fantastic because it will help us as we progress through our latter years. If you're young, is it good because you've been born with it? It's a normal part of your daily process. Mm. So I wonder how scared we should be with something like AI. Is it a bit like year 2000? You remember the Y2K?
Oh, of course it is. Everybody was thinking, well, it's the Millennium Bug. Planes have come crashing out of the
ground. Doomsday, wasn't it?
People have to get all the money out of the banks on the, you know, before 12 o'clock in 1999, because who knows what could happen.
Exactly.
What happens?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Absolutely nothing. But I was just wondering if that is going to be the case, or is it really something a bit more serious than that?
What I find interesting is because I woke up this morning, believe it or not, and it seems to have taken the Americans completely blindsided them, and also it's the pricing. You know, it's the Chinese are claiming that they've done this for under £6 million. I mean, that is less than a football that ends in a week. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's Teresa. I remember when ChatGPT first came out, Stephen was doing a lot of experiments with it and trying to get it to, you know, work out things for him and use logic.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that stuck with me was that he told ChatGPT that it took an hour to dry a towel, for example, on a washing line.
Right.
And asked how long it would take, three. And it just multiplied it by three. And it couldn't grasp the concept that the washing line could be long enough to put all three towels out at once.
Oh.
So you can be, you know, it's kind of like lies and statistics, whatever. You know, you can be, things can be very simple, but too simple for a complex entity to appreciate, you know what I mean?
So you mean, so basically, it's not going to save me when I want to put my smalls on the line, then, basically.
Well, it will assume you could only put one small at a time.
Okay.
Rather than put all your smalls at once. So yeah. Something as basic as that it couldn't get. And he argued with him. He kept saying, you know, the line can be longer. He's saying, no, if one is an hour, then three is 3 hours.
Right, okay.
And it would not be told that there was another way of looking at it.
I suppose the worrying thing is, like all things, it's going to develop, isn't it? That's what people are going to...
And it is developing.
Of course it will.
Yeah,
very rapidly.
It's the thing that I was told when I was a child, garbage in, garbage out.
Ah,
yes.
It's indeed.
You know?
Well, it's very, very true. It's very true what you're saying. But it is developing. I attended a demonstration where you had two sort of robots sort of speaking to each other.
Right.
You know, these answer calls. I mean, a lot of these answer call companies are out in India, et cetera.
Sure.
They're going to be totally and utterly replaced by these artificial intelligence-run machines. And the only way you could tell that they were not humans is that one didn't get annoyed.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. They're very polite all the time.
The thing that keeps coming to my mind is HAL.
It's HAL, yes, indeed. Open the pod doors, etc. It's interesting you say that because I was listening to Hannah's show yesterday when she was talking about a man about robotics, a very interesting guy, and he was saying this could be really useful for people working with people who are getting degenerative Alzheimer's and stuff like that, because they can tell, they'll be able to say to the person, this is where you are.
My brother is losing his sight.
Yes.
And he's putting all his faith in one of those suits that you sort of step into, and then it walks around for you.
Right.
You know, he's saying they'll make that, and then I won't have to worry that I can't see where I'm going, because the suit will take me.
And this is what I'm saying, that, you know, as you get into older age, etc., this can actually be very good for us.
Oh, the phone lines are going mad, Teresa, so thank you so much for the call. As they always do, thank you very much. 10 minutes before my show ends. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Johnny Mejias.
Hello, John, how are you?
Not so bad, thank you.
Good.
AI is obviously learning, because it said, I asked the question, it said, if all three towers are drying at the same time, they will all be dry in an hour.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
So it has learnt.
Yes,
it has learnt from its errors.
Thank you very much for that point as well.
Okay,
good to have you with us. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Charles, Peter again.
Hello, Peter.
Hello. If you recall, just a week or two ago, I said 2025.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
The big problems we got coming. The word your panelist is looking for is the point of singularity.
Singularity, not tipping point.
Yes. That's it, the point of singularity. And DeepSeek, I mentioned a few weeks ago. The reason it was done so cheaply was because they used AI to design it. So there's the frightening thing. The point of singularity looks like it's very, very close. And as Moore's law says, you know, we're only halfway on the chessboard, but each leap, you know, as you know, the chessboard story from the first to the last, if you double up each time, you're at 17 trillion on the 64th square. And according to Moore's laws, this is how technology is going. So if we're at the point or close to the point of singularity, then AI will start designing AI. And as you mentioned, it only costs 6 million because some bright ass, smart ass hedge funder who managed to tuck away multiple TSM chips before they were banned going to China, then he used cheap chips mixed with expensive chips using just a few bob, and hey ho, DeepSeek, which apparently already has got something on it called something order, where you can disappear from your desk and leave it to do your emails for you. So
interesting.
And it's the most downloaded. I think it nearly crashed Apple yesterday. It's free.
Yeah.
It's far superior to ChatGPT. And someone is now going to use AI to advance the AI. And that's the point of singularity. We're knocking the door. And
it's actually been done in the West, actually, using AI to improve their AI algorithms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it was always about.
The Chinese are cleverer.
Well, I wouldn't say cleverer. They've just
cheaper,
got there quicker.
Quicker.
You know, it's like a game of tennis, isn't it? They're going to knock it back now. And but again, the frightening thing you mentioned, the drop in Nvidia's stock and TSM's stock, they all went drastically down, the NASDAQ down. The point is that the reasoning for that, it might settle today. They might drill down on it and realize it's not quite as bad as what they first thought. But when you invest billions and billions and billions into companies, and these companies, like I said a couple of weeks ago, have gone from, well, when's the first $1 trillion company, to now we got $4 trillion companies. And Nvidia was 3.5, as you mentioned, down to 2.9, 600 billion gone overnight. Now, all that money they've put in, all these investors buying on future, on the PE ratios, everyone buying on that, suddenly now you can do it with 6 million. So they're never going to see the returns on that money.
Well, I wouldn't be too sorry for corporate investors.
Well, it's not corporate investors, though, is it?
If the venture capitalists crashes,
No, if the market crashes like it could do over this, then it's your pension's gone up the swanny. Everybody else's pension's gone up the swanny. All your insurance policy, everything. It's not just about the rich people. I mean, the CEO of NVIDIA, when I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, he sold something like 500... I can't recall the figure. I think it was half a billion, 500 million shares.
Yeah.
He saw it coming. He's tucked away now, feathers his nest, and got his legacy money, and fair play to it. But if it goes the way it could go, we're all up the swanny with no paddle, aren't we? Because it's all our pensions and investments, and then you've got the insurance, the mortgage, all. It's going to, you know, maybe we are, as I've been saying for a long time, living in a false economy, living on expectation, and maybe
strip it back to basics, Peter. That's the thing, I think we should all get ourselves some 4x4s and some big, sort of, an awful lot of diesel. How's that for a plan?
Well, Charles, you know me better than that.
Yeah.
I live. That's exactly what I do.
That's what I said. If I can't
fix it or make it or break it, then I don't want it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling, because we've actually flown through this morning's viewpoint into the last 2 minutes of the show. If you want to get your viewpoints across, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000.
Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And pensioners here, some more bits coming in. Pensioners are, okay, here we go. The tipping point, I've seen that film, doesn't end well. What we've got. So the millennium bug is nothing like AI, yes, but I do remember the fear. I was working for Reader's Digest in Canary Wharf. That's how long ago that was. Anyway, it's AI is not polite all of the time. Place two AI bots next to each other and they soon get irate. Okay. Meanwhile, pensioners are a tiny proportion of investors. It's the same old excuse that pension funds are somehow this giant tanker destroying the markets. They ain't. I'm just checking if I left somebody waiting on. Just 1 second, please. Morning caller, anybody there? No, sorry, I've got a phantom caller. That'll be AI. That'll be somebody using my voice. Then we're all in trouble. So the pensioners are a tiny, not a giant tanker pension funds. And looking at some other bits and pieces. No, I think we're pretty much all done there. Right then. Well, thank you very, very much for this morning's viewpoint. Thank you once again for all your comments. Don't forget, I'm going to be putting polls on the Facebook page. So if you're not already following us on Talk Radio Europe Official, please go forth and follow us so we can get you in on our poll of polls, if you will. Just looking at how that finally ended up, because you could have got your votes in as well on the Facebook poll. And I was saying the following, those who think Trump's doing a good job, well, we ended up with 36% of you thought he's doing a great job. 64% said you don't like the direction he's taking the US. So there you have it. You can check out that poll on the TRE website. I'll be back, of course, tomorrow with Let's Talk. Just a thanks to my guests, though, to Claudio Latorre, our impact player on the panel. He comes in, he goes out, he makes his statements, but thanks for joining me. And Richard Cowell, as always, good to have you with us. Thank you for your input.
My pleasure. Thank you, Giles.
And we'll see you again soon. This programme will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Brace yourself to Stephen Ritson and Europe Today is up next. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. I'll see you tomorrow.
Expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalog of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.